Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The spark of creativity burned brightly in one of Europe's darkest places, the Nazi camp at Terezin. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today we look at the history and the art of Terezin. Held up to the world by the Nazis as a gift to the Jews, it was in fact a way station on the road to almost certain death. But Terezin did actually produce an incredible array of music and art. This composer, Victor Ullmann, was already a rising star thanks to works like this Symphony No. 2 when he was sent to Terezin in 1942. In the camp, he would write almost two dozen works until he was sent to Auschwitz and killed in 1944. On the program today, the Nash Ensemble from England will play some of the music created in the camp at Terezin. We'll hear a survivor's own story of her time at Terezin. And to begin, we welcome filmmaker and broadcaster Simon Broughton, whose documentary, The Music of Terezin, is part of an ongoing exhibition at the 92nd Street Y here in New York called Will to Create, Will to Live, The Culture of Terezin. Simon, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
So set the stage for us. What was Terezin? What was it originally?
Well, Terezin was a town, a military town, built actually during the time of Mozart, not so far from Prague in Czechoslovakia, now the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. It's about 40 miles from Prague. But during World War II, during Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia, it was... it became a ghetto. So the original inhabitants were moved out, and large numbers of the Jews of Czechoslovakia and Central Europe were sent, obliged to go to Terezin. So a city, a town that was built for 5,000-6,000 people accommodated 60,000 people. So it was very overcrowded. Conditions were appalling, but it wasn't a death camp. It wasn't a place where people were gassed or exterminated. People died of illness and poor conditions. There are about 100 or so deaths a day on average. So it wasn't a nice place to live, but it wasn't an extermination camp.
It became known as the arts camp. Mm. How did that happen? It wasn't set up to be that.
No, absolutely not. That wasn't, you know, some crazy Nazi idea. It developed naturally and spontaneously because a lot of the people who were sent there were artists, composers, musicians. They, of their own accord, started a cultural life. Interestingly, at first, it was in secret because it wasn't supposed to happen. And I think it's very important that's told, because otherwise it seems somehow like, you know, the artists themselves were complicit in this sort of deception. That's not how it started at all. It shows how important art and music actually are in terms of survival, because, you know, for people, this was like, you know, an important, necessary thing, and of course, made it seem like a more normal life when you have concerts, when you can do these things.
So it began with, say, Jewish musicians smuggling instruments in,
exactly,
sometimes in pieces, so they could be put back together. And then once the Nazis got a whiff of what was going on there in the camp at Terezin, their reaction was...
Well, in a way, the Jewish administration in Terezin, I think, persuaded the Nazis that actually, you know, it was...
In their interest?
In their interests to do it. Mm-hmm. And certainly, it then got turned around when the Nazis did see what was going on. When questions were being asked by the Red Cross about what was happening to the Jews in Nazi-occupied Europe, they then thought, okay, we'll invite the Red Cross to inspect the place. And then they took it a stage further and made a propaganda film, mm-hmm, showing what was going on, and indeed some of the music is filmed for the propaganda film.
It was the film shown. Is alternately in English called The Führer's Gift to the Jews. I've also seen it translated as The Führer Gives a City to the Jews.
Yeah, that title apparently was never intended, because actually even the Nazis would never say that they would give these things to the Jews. That's, I think, a title that's been added later. The film was actually never finished or never shown.
But who was it intended for? Was it intended for the Red Cross? Was it intended for the German public to kind of quell any...
I think it was probably intended for the outside world and for those outside who were asking questions about what was happening to... I can't imagine that it would have been shown within Nazi Germany, actually.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that their film... includes some of the music that was performed in the camp, including the children's opera Brundibar by Hans Krause. We had the playwright Tony Kushner on soundcheck a couple of years ago. As you may recall, Simon, he and
Maurice Sendak
did an English language version of this opera, which was performed frequently, it seems.
In 55 times.
55
it was done
times.
In Terezin. And it was a really popular show.
There were probably a lot of alternatives.
Well, but it was done again and again, and it was a sort of escapist show. It's a really charming children's opera. It's fantastically well composed. It's got great tunes.
Well, Tony Kushner, in our studio with the Young People's Chorus of New York, told us a little bit of the backstory, and then we got a bit of a live performance of it. This is going back to October of 2003 on soundcheck.
Krause actually wrote it originally with a piano score. The score for the opera was smuggled into the camp by the teenage son of the original conductor of the opera when the Jews in the Prague ghetto were rounded up and brought into Theresienstadt. And then I think it was rewritten as an orchestral score by Krause in the camp using the musicians who were prisoners there. But essentially, it's the story of two kids who go into a town to get milk for their mother who's ill, and find that they have to earn money to get the milk, and find that their way of raising money to sing in the public square is blocked by a bully named Brundibar, which is Czech for bumblebee. Uh-huh. And they enlist the help of some animal friends and other school kids, and eventually sing in the town square, raise the money, get the milk, and go home to their mother and make her better.
Down its beams to brighten up their dreams. Dreams sweet as gingerbread, mommy with milk in bed. Happy chick, have no fear, have no fear. Aneko, we are here, we are here.
An excerpt from Hans Krause's children's opera Brundibar. You heard the playwright Tony Kushner, his English translation. Simon, he used the name Theresienstadt. That's the German name.
That's the German word for Terezin. Yes.
Terezin is the so-called
Czech
arts camp that we are talking about and hearing the music from on soundcheck today. Simon Broughton is a broadcaster and the creator of the film The Music of Terezin, which is showing at the 92nd Street Y on Saturday, January 21st at 6 p.m. And also joining us now in the soundcheck studio is Zdenka Fantlova, who was 19 years old when she was sent to Terezin. She wrote about her harrowing experiences in a book called The Tin Ring, and then went on to a 20-year career as an actress in Australia. Zdenka, thank you for being with us today.
Yes, thank you very much.
When you were sent to Terezin, how much, if anything, did you know about Terezin before you were sent there?
Nothing much, because it was exactly at the beginning. And I must say that today I have an anniversary, exactly 70 years ago.
Today?
On the day, 1942, we were taken away from home my mother, brother, and sister, myself, because father was already arrested a year before that because he listened to the BBC, and that was not allowed. And on that day, we went to Terezín. At that time, that was the only place I desperately wanted to go.
You wanted to go?
Yes, because my boyfriend was there. Mm. And you know how a 19-year-old thinks. Nothing else. Where is the man?
So were you sent to Terezín? You had already started acting by then, right? A little bit?
Not yet. I always wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But so it happened that soon after, when Terezín was opened up, because it was closed, and movement was restricted.
Mm-hmm.
But after the original people who lived there were moved out, the camp was opened up. And I must say that we have a much more freedom than we would have had outside.
Really?
So we could move around, visit each other. And, of course, for me, as a 19-year-old, the benefit or the beauty was the enormous number of clever and intelligent and talented people around which normally you wouldn't meet. And here they were, and I was drawn into the theater movement. At first, the theater and the music and everything, arts, were more or less not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody tried a little bit, this and that. And in the end, the Germans said, why not? We will call it Kameradenabende, which means friends' evenings,
mm-hmm.
and gave us a green light. And from then, it went on without any problems.
So we're hearing today about some of the musicians, the composers. There's lots of music from Terezín. How much theater was there in Terezín?
A lot. Because, amongst the thousands of people who were moved in, there were professional actors, directors, designers, writers, established in the pre-war cultural life in Prague. So he was a ready-made material. And some of them even refused to do it under those conditions. But then they were persuaded by others, say, here is the place, exactly the right place to do it. And so now there was a scramble for plays. Some people brought a play maybe in a suitcase. Some of them were written.
Right there in the camp?
Yes, they were mostly cabarets. One was a political, one was a satirical, local one.
Now, when you did political cabarets, did the Germans understand what was going on?
No, the Germans didn't, but the Jewish government did.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very careful and very frightened. So that even once it happened, because there was a man who was a genius, he was a sort of local Charlie Chaplin, who wrote a play, A Last Cyclist. And it was political dynamite. And the management, the Jewish management, came to see it on the first performance and gave an order it must never be shown because it might be
a little too
dynamite.
Obvious.
That's right.
Yeah. We're speaking with Zdenka Fontlova. She is a survivor of the Terezín camp. And Zdenka, I want to get more of your story in just a moment. But Simon Broughton, maker of the film The Music of Terezín, a number of people come and go in your film, including some of the artists who were in
absolutely.
I mean, there not a whole lot of them survived, but at least a couple of them did. One of them is František Domazlický.
Domazlický, yes, mm-hmm. yeah. He was a composer, an amateur composer, when he was in Terezín. He did survive, and he then became a composer, you know, for the rest of his life. But in the film, he talks very charmingly about a piece he wrote. It's called Song Without Words, and how the quartet that he wrote it for, who played it, the Ledech, he was called. He was one of the members of the the Prague Philharmonic. He was, I think the leader of the Prague Philharmonic, who was sent to Terezin. And Domaš Liszt was just sort of, I think modestly delighted that Ledger said, oh, yeah, I've heard a lot of bad amateur compositions, but this one's really good. And it is. It's got a real charm about it. A lot of the music was written by sort of avant-garde progressive composers.
Well, I want to get to that in a little bit,
more,
too.
More but, difficult. Yeah. But the Domaš Liszt piece is really charming, really beautifully written, and is a very seductive, easy piece to listen to.
Well, let's do that. Let's,
well, gorgeously played by our friends here with the Nash Ensemble.
Members of the Nash Ensemble, the string quartet of the Nash Ensemble, with us in the Soundcheck studio, and we'll speak a bit with them later on in the program as well about playing some of this music from Terezin. But this is The Song Without Words by František Domaš Liszt on Soundcheck. Hard to believe that music was written in the camp, the Nazi camp at Terezin, but that is in fact the case. Song Without Words by the composer František Domaš Liszt, played live by the string quartet of the Nash Ensemble here in our New York studio from England, They'll be playing some more music from the camp at Terezin for us later on in the program. We'll take a quick break, and when we return, more with the actress and Terezin survivor Zdenka Fantlova, and with filmmaker Simon Broughton as well. You're listening to Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're in the midst of a special program today looking at the music and art that thrived in the midst of the Holocaust at the extraordinary camp called Terezin. Simon Broughton is the man behind the documentary film The Music of Terezin, and the actress Zdenka Fantlova is a survivor of the Terezin camp. And Zdenka, we talked a little bit a few minutes ago about how you came to the camp in the first place. What was life like just on a daily basis at Terezin?
Well, it was very crowded, but you get used to it. You get used to anything. In the end, we had our living space measured out, 1.6 meters, and that was your living space. And you got used to it. It was all right. You could stretch out. It was your bed. You had your own blanket. And the rest was something else. And that was human relationships, human contacts, work, and art. But I must say that in the theater, it was not, and the music was not entertainment. It was a moral support. Mm. So the people who managed to get a ticket to sit there for 1 hour, listen to the music, or listen to the play, they were transported into a different time of human dignity, of their past, of being humans, and gave them hope that they will return back to it. And of course, with the Germans, it wasn't their just goodwill and giving us pleasure and so on. Not at all. They knew full well what they were doing.
Did you know what they were doing?
They knew we were sentenced to death.
Mm-hmm.
And so they thought, okay, let them play and laugh and so on. They will come to the end anyway. So we were actually dancing under the gallows.
Right.
Happily.
Were you aware, and when I say you, I mean
yes,
collectively, were all of you or some of you aware of the way the Nazis were using the camp for propaganda purposes?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
So you mentioned before that sometimes you would have an artist, a writer, a musician, a composer who would say, no, I'm not working under these conditions. But then everyone else would sort of say, no, we need this now.
It's even more important here than outside. It's your duty.
So, Simon, there's the illusion that was created here. I mean, as Zdenka says, everyone's sort of on a pathway to a place from which they are not going to return. After the Brundibar performance, you mentioned, you know, in the Nazi film that
yes,
they were making, they actually shot a performance of this opera.
The last scene, yes,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
After which, all of those kids, with two exceptions, were sent to Auschwitz and killed. And the composer, Hans Krause, and a number of other composers also sent there and gassed. How did their music survive?
Different ways. Some of it was left behind in Terezin, so people there kept it. There are scores by Haas that he probably took with him to Auschwitz, and they're lost. They didn't survive. So basically, if it was left in Terezin, it survived.
It had a
if
chance.
People mm-hmm. took it with them, it didn't. I mean, Pavel Haas wrote a fantastic piece for string orchestra, which was filmed by the Nazis, and actually he took the score with him, but the parts were left in Terezin, mm-hmm, and so the full score could be reconstructed from the parts after the war.
So this suite for piano that he wrote obviously must have been left behind, or we would not have it.
Yeah, I think so.
This is Pavel Haas, who died in the gas chambers at Auschwitz, and his suite for piano, Opus 13. Thank you. Some music from the composer Pavel Haas, his suite for piano. Haas was interred at the camp at Terezin and then sent to Auschwitz, did not survive the war. Simon Broughton, the filmmaker behind the movie The Music of Terezin, is with me, and so is Zdenka Fontlova, a survivor of the camp at Terezin. Zdenka, how did you survive the closing of that camp and what came after?
Well, I have survived everything by miracle or my own will and by God's will, God knows what. It's a combination of a lot of things.
Towards the end of the war, as they got more desperate and it seemed like the end was inevitable, that the Germans would lose, it seems like they just started emptying the camps and more people on those trains to Auschwitz. Were you sent on one of those trains?
Well, at that time we didn't know anything about the word Auschwitz didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
The word the gas chambers was never mentioned. The mood in the camp amongst us, young ones, was, you know, there were always rumors that in 2 months' time that the Germans are losing the war at the Russian border, and in 2 months' time there will be the end of the war, and we'll go home and start where we finished. At the same time, we felt we were relatively safe because we were still on the Czechoslovakian territory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after 2 months, there was not the end of the war, so we extended it another 2 months. And this is how you think. You just keep going, a day after day.
How long were you there?
2.5 years.
Hmm.
And Zdenka was actually on the transport that took most of the composers to Auschwitz.
Yes.
In fact, she was with many of them.
That's right, all of them. That was all the artistic train or whatever, and there was Karel Ančel,
the conductor.
Who then became...
Mm-hmm. Who did survive. Yeah.
That's right, conductor of the Czech Philharmonic. Yeah. And 10 years later, we met in Australia.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, this seems like a strange question to ask, but do survivors of Terezin have a certain nostalgia for the years that you spent there?
I would never go back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to retain the picture as it was. It gives me strength. And if I would go there today, there would be cars parked and there would be sweet shops, and I can't afford to see that. I can't afford to see any of the camps because I must remember as it was. And that gives me strength,
mm-hmm,
in comparison to other life.
Now, your memoir about your experience at Terezin and, near-death experience after, you know, on these transports is in your book called The Tin Ring. What does The Tin Ring refer to?
Well, The Tin Ring was a ring that my boyfriend gave me when he was sent after the death of Heinrich. Heydrich, who was the protector of Czechoslovakia, he was in a transport to the east, my boyfriend, gave me a tin ring secretly, which he made himself, engraved it 13th of June 1942, and said, this is our engagement ring, it will protect you, and if we survive the war, I'll find you somewhere, and was gone. And that ring for me was a symbol of love and hope, and I had to keep it. And I was in danger many times, mm-hmm, especially when we arrived in Auschwitz, where we had to strip absolutely, you know, naked, mm-hmm, and take everything off, rings and watches and so on. And one girl put a ring under the tongue, and they found it, and they killed her. And I was two girls after her. And somebody said, for heaven's sake, you crazy, throw the ring away. This is only a piece of metal that has no value at all. This is life. And I thought, no, I can't do it. And so I decided, like, you know, Russian roulette, I thought, well, there are always two possibilities. He might find it or he might not. And I put my life on the line and put it under my tongue. And I went through the search. And he was searching in my hair. And then fate intervened, a higher charge walked in and said, hurry up, los, los, schnell, schnell. And he kicked me out and I saved the ring. And I have the ring till this day.
Stenka, it is a remarkable story. And I'm sure, Simon, that in making the film, The Music of Terezin, you came across other remarkable stories as well. But, you know, it just, it's sort of the will to live, the will to create, as this series of exhibitions is called.
Yes, which comes from a statement of Victor Ullmann, who is one of the composers who is there. But
great composer,
no,
yeah.
I mean, Stenka has many fantastic stories in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also talking tonight at the Y at 8 o'clock, too.
I should say event, this series of events happening at the 92nd Street Y here in New York runs through February 16th. It includes concerts, films, art exhibits, lectures, including Zdenka Fondlova tonight, and Simon's film, The Music of Terezin, on Saturday evening at 6 p.m., and then the Nash Ensemble, whom you'll hear performing live in just a moment, performing Thursday and Saturday at 8 o'clock each night as part of this series at the Y. But let me thank both of you. Zdenka, a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much.
Simon, good to see you again. Thank you for being with us on Soundcheck.
When you rely on friends, that's the whole point of it.
A little bit more from Hans Krause's opera called Brundibar, his children's opera performed 55 times in the camp at Terezin. In a moment, what else was going on in Terezin? We'll hear a couple more live performances from the string quartet of the Nash Ensemble.
Violin, as soon as-